I'll call to order the Tuesday, September 12, 2023 Board of Adjustment meeting. Mr. Liaison, would you call the roll?
Yes. Mr. Norgard?
I'm here.
Ms. Hammond?
Here.
Mr. Minshew?
Here.
Ms. Rogers?
Here.
Mr. Sharp? Here. You have five. You have a quorum.
Excellent. I believe at this point I will ask to if there is any motion to approve the agenda for tonight.
I have a change, and I'd like to suggest that we do the special item after the public hearing is closed. I mean, after that case is heard and decided.
We have a motion to hold the item five, special items.
Until I second, after. Sharp.
All in favor?
Here.
Aye.
Aye.
Any against? So we'll move that item. Okay, so that approves the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from the March 14 meeting?
I'll make a motion.
There's a motion on the table.
Second.
Is there a second? Is there any discussion or any changes that anybody wants to see?
Yes. So, the one that I noted and kept track of is on page 22. Mr. Norwood is identified, and I believe it's Mr. Norgard. Oh.
Yeah, I caught that as well.
Okay. And there was another that T.O. was put in instead of T.W.O., but I'm afraid I didn't note where it was. So, I guess we'll let that go, huh?
Okay. Any other modifications or changes? Seeing none, let's vote to approve the minutes. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. All in favor or any against?
I abstained. Sharp.
Okay. So the minutes are approved. So now we have a public hearing. So case number 234-2023. A request of Jeremy Spillman and Brooks Chandler owners seeking approval to use the cottage optional development standards on property addressed as 200 West Old Plank Road to facilitate the development of an 18-lot subdivision to be known as OPR subdivision as required by section 29-6.4J of the Unified Development Code. Said real estate being Lot 1 of OPR subdivision recorded in plat book page 50, book 55, page 71, located in the northeast quarter of section 10, township 47 north, range 13 west, city of Columbia, Boone County, Missouri. The above described tract of land contains 2.22 acres and is the same land being described by deeds recorded in book 4996, page 100, ABD, book 5274, page 74 of the Boone County records, subject to any easement or restrictions of record or not of record, if any. Also known as 200 West Old Plank Road. Would the individual, oh.
Has it been posted?
Actually, I need to pause. Could I swear staff in, please?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So has the property reference been properly posted?
Yes, it has.
And have there been any inquiries?
There have been a couple via phone call. We have individuals in the audience today that I have been in communication with. So over the course of the open advertisement, roughly three inquiries on the property specific to this request.
Okay. And is there anything else I'm supposed to do? Okay, well, I don't believe there's anything else I need to ask. So would the individual seeking application for the optional design standards please come forward, swear in, and give your testimony?
Hello, my name is Jeremy Spillman, and I'm here looking.
Could I ask you to swear in with
the... Oh, yeah, sorry. 6030 North Locust Grove.
6030 North Locust Grove. Yes, sir. We are here looking to get the cottage option and have Keenan Simon here to represent us.
Okay. Are there any questions for this speaker? Okay, Mr. Simon, please come forward.
Thank you, Keenan Simon, 1516 West, Business Loop 70 West. Well, I'll be honest with you, I watched the video on the last one and they entered into evidence the application, the, I guess, the staff report, and then also the presentation. So I'd like to enter these into evidence for these.
Okay.
Like I said, my name is Keenan Simon here with Simon & Schrumpf Engineering. I'm here on behalf of Jeremy Spillman and Brooke Chandler, the owners of the property. So just to kind of provide a summary of requests that was in the staff report, the property is a 2.2 acre tract. We currently downzone the property from multifamily to R2, and we are proposing 17 single family residential homes on the site. Tonight, we're in front of you requesting the optional cottage standard development standard per the UDC. And our proposed development is to meet all the City of Columbia regulations. Currently, to date, the preliminary plat for the cottage style layout has been approved by planning and zoning, along with the downzoning to R2. And it has gone to council for the downzoning to R2 as well. Just to give you a little bit of an aerial overview, we got Old Plank to the north. The property is the yellow box parcel in the middle of the page. And then Bethel School Road is there to the east. This is kind of a blow up view of the preliminary plat that was taken and approved by planning and zoning. Has 17 single family home lots on there. The average lot size is about 3,500 square feet. We have a couple that are a little bit smaller than that, but in general, most all the lots are about that 3,500 square foot. Typical lot width is 34 feet in width, aside from one lot at the southwest corner that's a little bit narrower than 34 feet. Also, the typical lot depth is about 100 feet as well.
The typical what?
The typical lot depth is about 100 feet as well. This is a zoning map. This was actually used for the rezoning request. So our property is boxed in the red, but it is not currently zoned RMF. It has actually been downzoned to R2. Just to give you an idea, to the north of us, across Old Plank, is Boone County RS zoning, which is very similar to the R1 category here in the City of Columbia. To the east, we have Boone County RM. To the west, we have Boone County RM. That is their multifamily standard as well. Currently, there's single-family homes that are on both of those parcels. Further to the west and to the south, we have RMF, which is the City of Columbia multifamily residential apartment complexes. Further to the east, we have a planned development. It's kind of like a duplex cottage style kind of layout per se. It's a mix between, I'd say, an R2 and multifamily type of a scenario, if that kind of makes sense. More RM county zoning to the south as well. So what's the purpose of this cottage subdivision? Well, the real intent of this is to provide an infill development for affordable housing. All the utilities are necessary for this development. There's no extension of any sort of utility that's needed. We got sewer, water, electric service all on the property. So there's really no improvements that need to be made that are off-site. So that's a big benefit. The intent's really to create a community that reflects the surrounding area. There's a big mix of multifamily, single family, and we felt like this is a great centrally located in the southern part of Columbia to allow for this type of a smaller cottage style community. It really opens up the book as far as, I guess, homes that are available in the Columbia market to a smaller footprint with new construction that I think you guys have only seen two or three of these come through thus far, and I think maybe only one is really under construction. So we're really trying to provide that alternate option for someone that's looking to maybe purchase their first-time home buyer or move out of a rental position and have some home ownership, if that kind of makes sense. These are some preliminary floor layout plans that we have based off of our lot widths. On the first floor, you'll see that there's a family space, master bedroom. As you move to the upstairs, there's two bedrooms with another living space as well. This is front elevation. The intent is to have more of a little modern look to this to kind of, put Jeremy's stamp on it as far as Spillman homes go, if that kind of makes sense. This is a little bit of some inspiration photos and a rendering just to kind of give the intent of kind of what they're looking at possibly doing out there if they're able to move forward with this development. And really to kind of summarize why this is such a great fit, it really goes back to the location of the property. It's less than a mile to the Veteran United campus, less than a mile to the South Providence Medical Park, you know, less than a mile to Rockbridge High School, Rockbridge Elementary, Rockbridge State Park, and a fair amount of other commercial and retail areas nearby with Corporate Lake and some of those areas nearby the Rockbridge High School area. So be granted for this optional development standard, there's really three criteria that we have to submit to and prove that we're fit for this type of optional development standard. And I'm gonna kind of break that down to you and kind of just summarize as quickly as I can going through why we meet the requirements for these three standards. The first standard is, do we meet the intended character of the area per the city's adopted comprehensive plan? The city's future land use plan identifies this area as residential. Yes, it does. There's residential to the north, east, west, south. So yes, we do meet that one. Is the existing area a mix of different residential uses? We obviously have single family to apartments to some multifamily plan development stuff to the east. So there is a pretty broad mix of different types of residential uses surrounding this parcel as well. Does it provide a livable and sustainable neighborhood? We believe with location and being close proximity to business, schools, and recreation, that it should be a great place for this community to prosper if we are able to move forward with it. And does it provide good land use and growth management? And per the Columbia Imagine program, it's a higher density development, which is also an infill. So that definitely clicks on all those requirements that we're trying to fill. Going to the second kind of requirement per the UDC is, will we provide adequate off-street parking and will not result in significant increases in off-site parking on sections of local neighborhood streets? The fact is that each lot will have its own adequate off-street parking per the city requirements. On top of that, we worked through the preliminary plat stage of adjusting the lot width so that we're able to accompany a on-street parking stall between each drive. I'll show you display that here in a second. And then thirdly, all the lots that we're developing are gonna front their own street that we are constructing. None of them are gonna front or have access to Old Plank, therefore they won't be able to park on any of those streets. Here is the concept that we kind of work through with providing on-site parking, meaning the on-site parking requirement, along with making sure that we generate enough space to have an additional parking stall between drive entrances as the lots stack down the street, if that kind of makes sense. That kind of leads us into the third section, and that kind of summarizes as far as will not create additional traffic congestion or risk to the public health and safety in the surrounding area. Previously, our zoning category of residential multifamily would allow for a higher density development, which would produce additional traffic. So going forward with the R2 zoning with the cottage-style standard will actually reduce and limit the amount of dwelling units that we can have on the property. So we feel like that's good practice as the Old Plank is undeveloped currently at this time, or unimproved currently at this time. Furthermore, I mean, the 17 lots is very minimal. If you read through the city staff report, it doesn't require a traffic study because they deem it as being so minimal. So kind of to wrap things up and go through a conclusion of the property, we believe that this development area fits this type of infill very well as a location for alternative housing needs. It will provide a new item in the housing market that isn't readily available. The density fits well with the surrounding uses. You go from single family to multifamily as you go further south, east and west. So we think that having this little pocket as a community would actually fit very well. It's intended to be an affordable community with nearby to schools, business, and recreation, which should allow it to prosper and I would think be successful. We also are meeting the city's future land planning, and that's by the increased density and the smaller footprint with an infill development of this nature. Also, the rezoning and the preliminary plat was approved by P&Z, just to kind of give you some background as far as what their thoughts and input were on the proposed design as well. With that, I'm open for questions, comments, or anything else you might have.
Are there any questions for the applicant? Just so you know, we'll go through the staff comments after in a few minutes.
Yeah,
and when we're done with those, you will have an opportunity to speak again.
Sounds right.
Go for it.
So do you know when that property was annexed into the city?
It would have been a few years ago, I would say. 2020? 2021.
And that was before it was RMF at that time?
It was, it was RM in the county, which is residential multifamily in the county, and then it was annexed with like zoning to RMF in the city.
Questions when we get.
Oh,
go ahead, Paul.
Go ahead. Let's see. It was pointed out there's parks and schools close at hand. Do you visualize children or people being able to bicycle or walk to these places?
Currently Old Plank is unimproved, so there's obviously some obstacles there. But we will be providing sidewalk at the frontage and on our street specifically. But I mean. When you look at having, a couple thousand acre recreation, Rockbridge State Park, where it's more of a destination location that has a parking lot and shelters and stuff. Yeah, I mean, I do think that this would fit well to support families.
As long as you can drive there.
Yeah.
So what price range are these going to be in?
I probably am going to have to defer that to one of the owners. I know that it's been a fluctuating market, and that's really what they're trying to do there is everything they can to bring the cost down. So that's been the goal.
Oh, I'll hold on that. And also I had a question about the layout, which.
Well, the layout stemmed from some of the civil design work. So if there's a question with respect to the layout, I can possibly answer that for you.
Well. So this is an up and down. These are up and down. Are they all going to be the same?
Well, we're limited with the footprint. When you say the same, there's going to be some variety. It's not going to be the exact same house built, directly next to each other. But we were just trying to provide an example of what the intent is, not necessarily that this is the only footprint that's going to go out there.
So there's a master bedroom on the first floor, or the ground level, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then upstairs is a living room and two bedrooms? Or is that the math? Anyway, I was confused about the bathrooms.
Okay.
So
we have there's a master bathroom in the this is the floor plan for the first level at grade.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now please note that we're at preliminary stages with everything. We don't want to put the cart in front of the horse here. If this doesn't fall through, then there's been a huge expense that goes towards creating these that never gets used. So with that said, this is a concept, but it is, we've done our homework to make sure it works out. So this lot, this home footprint is 20 foot wide. You walk into the family room, which progresses an open floor plan into the kitchen dining area. Then you'll continue into the master suite. There is a master bathroom there in the upright corner, and then there's a half bath just off of the kitchen.
Okay, so that's the entry level.
Yep, and then you'll see the stairs directly across from the half bath going to the upstairs, and that's where you come into a living space, and then the two bedrooms are towards the exterior ends of the house, and that's mainly due to egress.
And the two bedrooms upstairs share a half bath?
Yes.
Well, how does that work? Okay, can answer when
you're... Yeah.
Okay.
There is a shower right next to the
well, that's more than a half bath.
I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, I didn't see
okay.
that.
Okay, thank you. I can see it, but I thought that says half bath. And the on-site, the street parking, you know, when I looked at the diagram of the parking and it showed the driveway, yeah, angled in, can two cars actually...
Yeah, I mean, essentially what we have there is the size of two standard City of Columbia parking stalls side by side, and then we just provided the 45 as a means of being able to get around the other vehicle potentially so that there's enough parking area there for two stalls to fit. So, yeah, standard perpendicular parking stall is 9 feet or eight. The city requirement's 8 foot wide by 18 foot deep.
And it was designed that way to account for on-street parking.
Correct. The intent is to try to accommodate. I mean, and this isn't finalized. There could be an option where we look at having a garage where there's it's set a little bit closer, and we get the two parking stalls with a garage and an inline vehicle in the front, which is a similar scenario. If someone's parked behind the garage, that vehicle would have to move to leave. This was the best intent so that we could accommodate additional overflow parking onto the public street.
Yeah. Additional questions? Thank you, Mr. Keenan.
Thank you. Yes.
Is there anybody else in the public wishing to speak in favor of this application? If so, please come forward. I see none. So is there anybody in the...
I would like to ask the owner about the layout.
Okay.
Hi, how are you?
Jeremy Spillman, 6030 North Locust Grove.
Pull the microphone up.
Sorry.
You can walk up to it a little bit closer.
So, okay. Well, actually, that three-quarters bath answers my question.
Sure. Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, that's what I... All I wanted to know to clear that up and make sure. I thought, what am I looking at?
And the only thing I wanted to add is while we're somewhat limited on the footprint, one thing as a builder, like I would never put it together until I started building homes. So I've been building homes for 20 years in this community. And one thing that you can do to make a big impact on offering some diversity on the style of homes isn't just the footprint, it's also the roof line and some of the exterior finishes. So the goal would be to have a similar footprint, but to offer some unique options so it's not just 100% duplication by changing the roof line and the different elevation finishes.
That's nice and makes sense. And what kind of price... I have two questions. Are these going to be built for rental property or to sell?
So the goal, we are entertaining the idea of holding on to some of them, but the primary goal would be for resale. And our price point, we're wanting to be between $250 and $300. Of course, with lumber and everything being a commodity, it's hard to pencil in an exact cost. But we know that we can be close to that price point depending on at what point we can start building. Right now we're in a of course, a high interest market, but the benefit of that is we're back to 2018 lumber prices. We have some opportunities to build again, or we can finally negotiate with subs and do some things we were unable to do during COVID, where we kind of lost the ability to negotiate for anything. You were just trying to get people to show up and get the job done. Another thing I wanted to add on the driveway was we also want to try to still have some green space. We don't want the community to just feel like a ton of concrete. So the other reason to do the angled approach is that not only give them the ability to still have the two parking spaces, but to do it without having a sea of concrete. All right, thank you, y'all.
Any other speakers in favor of this application? Seeing none, are there anybody from the public wishing to speak against this application? Please come forward and speak now.
Jeff Revis, we own the...
Please give your address and swear.
150 West Old Plank Road. Yes. We own the plot that I suppose abuts this property to the northeast, roughly. Shares maybe 175 feet of property line with it. And I suppose I'm here to voice our concern about the optional cottage zoning. I don't know what the right word for it is, but our main concern is that it allows for a smaller property offset on the rear side of these properties, as well as these narrower lots will change us from having what is currently a single neighbor to the what would be the west, I suppose, to now having five individual lots who have rear exits 10 feet from our property line. And we feel that would both degrade the value of our property as well as sort of over time, and I don't mean this as a comment on the people who inhabit those homes, lead to trespasses. There's only 10 feet. You know, they all have rear doors that are essentially going to open onto our property. And unfortunately for us is that our home is located towards that end of our property line. So it's really quite near where our home is. I know that previously there was a rezoning of this same property to R2, and we didn't have a problem with that because to our understanding, it didn't change the rear offsets. Offset may not be the right word, but essentially, it wouldn't change the offsets allowed for those properties.
Pat, do you have a way to project a map on the screen so we can have a clearer understanding?
Apologize for my lack of preparedness.
Oh, no, that's quite all right.
Quite as polished.
The parcel that the gentleman is speaking to is the one that is immediately to the east or to the right of the yellow parcel that you see, or to the east towards.
We've got something in the way of looking at our screen, a box, not optimum mode.
We'll use this then. So the property to the left-hand side of the graphic is opposite side of where the T is. Applicant's property, and it is north of what you see at the very bottom of the subdivision, which are actually two multifamily building and the parking lot to the condominium complex that's immediately in the south.
Will you put this back up?
You can see it on the locator map on the agenda as well. If you...
And this may be the easier graphic for you to see.
Yes.
So the blue parcel is the subject site that the applicant owns. The green is what is inside the city's
building. Both of those look blue.
So which is your property?
So it's probably roughly the left half of the, to the top right of the box red property marked R.M. Boone County. I don't believe it's that entire area because I believe that encompasses a few
this
one. Different plots.
So you're, yeah.
We're the part directly abutting the...
That one.
The east.
The area in question.
The west half.
Okay.
So your property goes from Old Plank down to the
Yeah, it's the entire height of that blue area, I suppose. It's just not the entire width of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he owns this side right here.
Yeah.
And then somebody else owns this over here.
So you own half of that, that we
yeah,
can
the,
see?
Yeah, the half closest to this yeah. proposed development, essentially.
And you have a single-family home on it?
That's correct. I know it is zoned RM, but we do. It's a single-family home. And I believe that entire zone is only single-family homes at the moment. Not that it's zoned that way. But to be clear, we had no problem with the R2 zoning. We don't have any objection to them developing the land or anything like that. Our main concern is both the density of new neighboring properties as well as the lack of the normal 25-foot setback that would normally exist between our properties and theirs. We feel it would necessitate us building a fence or a barrier of some sort at cost to us, as well being pretty onerous during the construction process of this new adjacent subdivision. I suppose it's not what we thought we were buying into when we purchased the property. It would change the sort of the character of our plot and the surrounding area, but I don't think we have any objection if they were set back, you know, a normal amount from the property line, but having five new plots there, I suppose, is our main objection. Beyond that, I don't think we object to these plans.
How wide is your property?
Wide in the sense of?
Width from?
On the road front?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. I'm afraid I don't.
Well,
no,
how?
It's deeper than it's wide, but.
Deeper than it's wide.
It's so relatively wide, but if you, I suppose that picture's not up anymore.
How
but
far is
our
your
house sits close to the that this side of the property is, I suppose, the main problem. If I could move our home to the center of the width of our property, I don't think there would probably be any issue.
Was the zoning changed on the subject site since you lived there,
or yes,
when you bought the property?
I know the zoning has changed since I've been there because there were previous notices we received. And to my understanding, and it may be a lack of my, I do have a lack of understanding of zoning, but my understanding was that the previous change was to R2, which wouldn't reduce the back offset. So we didn't have any objection to that. My understanding is it's just the cottage optional development rules that would shrink that offset and put these properties, you know, within 10 feet of our property line, essentially.
So are you saying it wasn't multifamily before you bought it?
Before you bought your property? I don't know that I have the entire timeline. I would have to defer to. But I know it got zoned down from, I believe it went from RMF to R2 while we were there, which was fine with us. It's just the adoption of these additional, and really just the one aspect of it. We don't necessarily object to, it's the combination of the narrowness of the lots afforded by this option, as well as the lack of offset that puts such a significant number of properties now next to our property line.
So I have a question. If the applicant were required to include screening along a portion of their development, would that alleviate your concerns?
Assuming the nature of the screening was enough to create a reasonable barrier, I believe that would address all.
Any further questions?
So these proposed lots are 100 feet in depth, right? Is what I think I heard. And
I think they're 104 up.
Yeah, 103.
So I'm just wondering how much of a backyard setback would there be?
My understanding is it's 10 feet.
We did see a chart on that. Okay.
Which, again, that's if they were set further up the lot, then there was, it also wouldn't be an issue. Really just that one point of contention. We have the current plans. Broadly, we're in favor of more affordable housing in Columbia. It's really just that one point that we're here to speak on.
Any further questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Are there any other individuals wishing to speak in opposition? Please come speak now. Being none, I will ask staff if they would like to give a report.
Yes. Let me start with answering a couple of questions that the board has asked. The property has roughly 111 feet of frontage along Old Plank Road. The current structure is set roughly 10 feet off of the eastern property line of the subject tract. and has frontage of roughly 208 feet in length from Old Plank to its rear property line before it then transitions into the city's zoning classification and the current apartment complex. The other thing that I'd like to point out is while there is a minimum setback of 10 feet established pursuant to the optional development standards, the development plan does identify or the subdivision plat and the infrastructure that will be required to support these homes requires a minimum of a 16-foot rear yard utility easement on both sides, east and west, which default becomes the required setback. So you're not going to have a home any closer than 16 feet to the property line. And then additionally, if I'm looking at the cottage layouts that are here, or the layout that is here, you're looking at a 55-foot deep structure with roughly 23 feet additional on the front of the property, which gives you a total of 78 feet in depth from the street right-of-way line to the rear of the structure. That does allow for some additional rear yard on that 100-foot deep lot. That'd be 78 feet to be a 22-foot rear yard. So there is some additional space to potentially have additional required setback. But the structure itself, unless it's enlarged, and as the applicant has pointed out, these are preliminary designs at this point. They may be modified. It would be in the board's purview to specifically indicate that the footprint as presented tonight is what the conditional approval is being granted for. The applicant at that point would be required to build or design within the footprint that you've seen here, the 55 by 20. Ms. Hammond?
So that 16-foot utility easement at the rear.
Correct.
And that, within that 16-foot easement, is that the 10-foot setback that's required, or is there a 10-foot setback in addition to that?
The 10-foot setback is included in that. So by default, as I indicated, the 16 feet from the property line inward to the property is actually the setback.
And can there be screening on a utility easement?
Typically not, because our utilities do not allow that. So if you were to require screening, the screening would need to be specified on the inside of the easement, which would be 16 feet off the property line.
So that would leave it like 6 feet from the house?
Yes, roughly. Because if we're dealing with a 23-foot driveway surface, a 55-foot deep building, per the plans, that gives you 78 feet minus the 100. That's going to leave you 22 feet minus 16. 22 minus 16, that'll leave you 6, you're correct, 6 feet.
So that doesn't make much sense.
So the sense of space, I think what you have to think about in that respect, the sense of space at that juncture, if a fence or some type of screening device is placed 16 feet into the interior of the property, any sense of space for the rear of the building becomes significantly diminished. Again, the issue is obviously that this property was originally zoned RMF in 2001. It could have been developed with a multifamily building on it. It probably would have had similar constraints. However, the building would have been more monolithic in nature, not divided and separated with setbacks on the sides of the property. So the mass of a building under the prior zoning would have been much greater, probably far more imposing. That's not to diminish the speaker's concerns about the location of these structures and the number of them being greater. It's just when you look at it from a massing perspective, the overall mass of a multifamily building would be greater than the individual cottage lots and the houses to be built because of the separation between each.
If a multifamily building were built there, the parking would have to be behind the building according to today's ordinances, right?
It would not be allowed in the front yard, the required front yard. So depending on how the building was actually situated on the property, if the building flanked a common driveway and a parking lot was in between the buildings, which may have been the most economical way to do that, That would have worked. That would have pushed the multifamily building probably back to the exterior boundary lines of the property. So we did never, the staff never received a development plan for multifamily on this site. So that can't really speak to what it would have looked like, but there are other design alternatives that could have addressed that.
If the cottage designation is not approved by the board, it's still zoned R2, and that means duplexes would go in. Is that the
That is not the only option available, and I would caution the board of going to the extreme of what the other uses are. 5,000 square foot single family lots are permitted on this site, and as the staff report points out, the analysis, there is a close approximation of single family and duplex units to those that are proposed in this alternative development style. The alternative development style is probably yielding a slightly higher development density than you would have when you take all of the other set-asides out for multifamily or duplex development. But when you spread that cost of development over a smaller number of lots, the ability to provide affordability or attainability for individuals that have lesser means is reduced. And so the concept behind having cottage standards is to allow to keep the development costs per lot at a lower general rate than it would be if you're developing standard single-family development on larger parcels of ground that aren't necessarily considered infill, but they're considered more greenfield development. This particular property, as shown in the aerial photography that we provided with the packet, is improved with a current single-family home. So, I mean, the development of this particular environment along Old Plank represents what was there at the time that this property was inside the county. It is now at the interface of the more urban city densities and utility services. The house is there. Once the house is removed, the site, by technical definition, would become infill because of its surrounding environment. Notwithstanding the comments that have been made, I think what the staff will offer, at least as some observations associated with this request, it did start as a rezoning with an accompanying preliminary plat, and that is the process that we follow with most developments that are going to seek cottage development standards, because it is difficult to demonstrate to the public that may be concerned of duplex development occurring on an R2 lot, as well as trying to ensure or convince the Planning Commission, I should say, that in fact they are intending on moving forward. That is why the preliminary came. Both actions were not without some conversation. The conversation was more focused on the platting action as it related to several other observations of this particular area as it relates to infrastructure, i.e. Old Plank Road. And so we're not going to acknowledge that there may not be issues associated with that. Old Plank Road is not optimal, but that is not really the issue here. It doesn't require a traffic study. It does have capacity for the 17 units. And any addition of residential dwelling units on this property, regardless if they're single family or duplex units, will have a similar impact. What we're looking at, or what our focus is as it relates to this request, is how does this proposal fulfill other objectives of the comprehensive plan? Offering housing diversity, offering income opportunities for income integration into a particular environment. Those particular areas are what this proposal would do. The site is subject to meeting all of our development requirements, and that means that the streets are going to have to be installed to meet all of our standards. They're going to have sidewalks. We're going to have to improve site visibility as you come out and make the connection to Old Plank Road with the public street that's proposed. We do require a stub street to be provided to the property to the west, at least one, and the neighboring property owner to the west did oppose adamantly the proposed preliminary plat during the Planning Commission. Applicant worked with our city arborist, as you saw in the packet, to identify the trees, which were the primary concern of the adjoining neighbor. Unfortunately, our speaker this evening that is opposing this request didn't come forward to discuss their issues at this prior to. Now, that being said, this is the venue in which to explain their concern, and I think they've done that. I think we're limited, however, from a city municipal purpose, to be able to do anything on the subject tract of land. That does not necessarily mean, and I will let our law staff advise you as well, that if you choose that you want a screening device installed as a part of this conditional approval, that screening device would need to likely be on the adjoining property owner's property in order to ensure that A, that owner is maintaining that screening device for their benefit, B, it's outside of our city's public utility easement because we will not allow it to be placed there. At that point, that becomes, in my opinion, more of a civil matter that the applicant and the opposing neighbor maybe can work out a resolution for. Is that a combination of a opaque screening device, or does it incorporate maybe landscape treatment along that portion of the property that abuts this development? When you get to the multifamily, the condominiums that are to the south of the subject site, that transition and this proposed development are somewhat compatible at that juncture. An additional screening along the eastern property line south of the speaker's property is probably, in our opinion, not necessary, given that the majority of that frontage actually will front to a parking lot in the condominium project. I think, as Mr. Simon pointed out, the project does require compliance with three general criteria. Those criteria were laid out in his presentation, and I believe legal counsel will reiterate what those criteria are. However, we believe that the actual request does comply and meet the objectives of the comprehensive plan. It allows for this integration of a land use within this cottage standard to be integrated into a mixed-use environment. It promotes the opportunity to bring in income integration and other available housing options, which are significant criteria associated with our livable and sustainable communities. Goals and objectives of the plan. The design of the project is yielding the most efficient design, and I speak not only from the regulator's perspective, I also speak from the perspective of having been involved in residential land development prior to coming back into government work. This design allows for a double-loaded street. Any other design, if you offset the street, is going to create non-buildable lots, reduce the overall lot number. Therefore, how the design of this project is structured is such that we have the best possible outcome as it relates to the yield and the design being most efficient. So with those comments, we believe that the proposal meets our criteria of the Board of Adjustment for application or approval of the optional development standards. And we would recommend that the board, after giving consideration to the testimony and the staff report, do grant approval. However, you do have options available to you to address the concerns that have been expressed. And our legal staff can provide any additional guidance as may be necessary.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. Any questions for staff?
Yes, I have a couple of questions. So if I understand this right, a fence could be put up as long as it's, it can't be put right on the property line, but it has to be like an inch over into the neighboring lot?
It is my understanding from our utilities division that we will not allow any structures to be placed within our city utility easements.
An inch would qualify.
An inch would qualify.
Okay.
Obviously, you're going to want to, and there's a, it's a sewer easement that is on the back of the properties adjoining. That is centered in the 16-foot utility easement, but that easement is defined to ensure that there's enough space. So when we, if the utility line has to be maintained, excavation, we don't have a cave-in. So we've got to be considering of how the foundation holes for a fence or some other type of landscape improvement may be installed isn't going to be encroaching into that general easement area. So it's probably more than an inch, but it's probably not a foot.
Okay, and then the other thing, a couple other things. So I'm really concerned, this would not be a livable neighborhood for me because it has no sidewalks on the streets, it has no bicycle paths, I wouldn't be able to get around. So when is that going to be addressed?
So the sidewalks specifically with the streets that are shown on the development plan will be installed at the time that the subdivision is constructed. The sidewalk along Old Plank Road along its frontage will be constructed concurrently. The future upgrades of Old Plank Road as it ties back further to the east and further to the west, and further to the west, one parcel removed, is another residential multifamily development inside the city that does have sidewalk. It was required at the time that that development was built. It was the original Brookside apartment complex. Old Plank Road, as Mr. Simon pointed out, is considered an unimproved public street. It is joint jurisdiction at this point, Boone County and the City of Columbia. This was an issue that actually came up during the Planning Commission meeting. It requires coordination between the two jurisdictions to be able to make the upgrades to Old Plank Road. Given as you move further to the west, past Forum Boulevard, we have the Gates subdivision and a lot of development that has occurred over the last decade. The road, unfortunately, not unlike Nifong Boulevard before it was upgraded, is lagging. It is behind, and we need to be making improvements to that roadway. To the east of Bethel Church Road is a county road. So we can't facilitate what happens with the county. And typically when roads get upgraded, they're normally upgraded as a result of a city capital project, and we just don't have one scheduled. So as we often tell our Planning Commission, sidewalks to nowhere begin somewhere. And in this particular instance, they will begin with this project, and then as development commences in the property immediately to the north, we have had people kicking the tires on it, so to speak, looking for that to potentially develop. The timing just hasn't been there. When that comes in, you'll not only have all of the northern frontage of Old Plank Road improved with a sidewalk, you will also have the entire eastern frontage of that property along Bethel Church Road improved. And so development brings along those types of investments and those types of upgrades. So it's a matter of time. I can't tell you what that matter of time is, but I can tell you it's a matter of time. Old Plank Road is not one that we are not aware as a municipality needs upgrades to address the traffic concerns, vertical and horizontal curves that it has. It is a very challenging roadway segment, and because of all of the curvature just to the west of this property before you get to Forum. And so that's going to take a little bit of additional work in our engineering design side of our offices. I think it will occur. I just don't know when.
And one more thing. So this is referred to as infill, but it looks like this is on the outskirts of Columbia. I'm surprised that could be called infill.
Infill is anything that does not result in going out further away from town and further away from the developed environment of the City of Columbia, what would be classically called greenfield development. So if we went a mile further south and we found a field and we decided to develop the field, which needed to have utility infrastructure extended to it, that's greenfield development. And that actually is specifically discouraged as a part of our comprehensive plan's growth management strategy. Taking parcels like this that are underutilized but fully serviceable by utility infrastructure, that is considered an infill parcel. And this is surrounded by other comparable densities, and therefore it meets that general criteria that we generally would apply and use that term with.
So the two properties on either side of this are in the county, so they do not have city utilities?
I don't recall if this is Boone Electric or if it is City Electric, and Mr. Simon may have that information. It's consolidated. I believe this is Consolidated Water. I don't believe it is City Water. But it does have city sanitary sewer and through a interconnection agreement with Boone County Regional Sewer District.
And it was allowed to be annexed in 2021 because of the property to the south of it, is that correct?
That is correct, ma'am.
So these are, you know, it's kind of spot annexation, I guess.
I wouldn't suggest that it's spot annexation. If we look at what's the duplex development that is east of Bethel Church Road, that is entirely within the city. The Walnut Brook Condominium Association is entirely in the city, and as you move further to the west, the original Brookside is fully inside the city, and I believe as we continue to move further west towards Forum, most of that property is inside the city. So, I mean, it is a jagged boundary in this particular location. It's unfortunately not an uncommon instance where we get the interface. We don't like creating islands, and so as this parcel was brought in 2001, it was likely part of our consideration that ultimately the two parcels on either side, east and west, would at one point come in, therefore creating from the intersection of Bethel all the way back to being inclusive of what was the Brookside project, a very large swath of city property. So, you know, we go around Georgetown off of Scott Boulevard. It is an enormous island in the city of Columbia, but it is, you know, that's how the annexation process works.
One more clip on the sidewalks. So everything along Old Plank Road has sidewalks except for the two Boone County properties. Is that correct?
If I am not incorrect, bear with me here.
I didn't understand from reading the literature that they will be required to put a sidewalk along Old Plank Road. Is that correct?
That is correct. Okay. So as part of the subdivision approval process, that is a standard mandated requirement. There was no waiver sought when the preliminary plat was presented.
Yeah.
The right of way for Old Plank was actually granted with the original platting of the OPR subdivision. So we already have the right of way. Now the sidewalk placement will be 1 foot off of the right of way. Roughly to the north in the right of way. There will be reconstruction along Old Plank Road in order to bring the elevation up in order to meet site visibility requirements. There is a small ridge and hill as you go to the west of this property, which does create a site visibility issue. That will all be addressed as a part of the formal submission of the construction plans for the infrastructure. But I think that is from an accessibility perspective for this particular parcel, regardless of how many units are on it, that is a significant improvement. Because right now, coming out of the driveway that is there, if you've been out to the site, it is depressed below the existing pavement surface. And I think what we will see is it either being elevated up with pavement or it'll at least have a better approach to where you can see to the east and the west. To the west of this parcel are two properties. That is where there is no sidewalk, and then with the multifamily development, that is where the sidewalk picks up. And then immediately, two parcels in essence to the east, once you cross the intersection of Bethel Church and Old Plank Road, you pick up on a trail network that was provided as a part of the existing duplex development that is there. It is a non-traditional sidewalk design, and that was allowed as a result of its planned development zoning designation. It's not the traditional right at the back of the right of way, in essence.
So just so I'm clear with the gentleman that owns the property beside this, how long has this been zoned multifamily?
So the multifamily, the county RM designation predates 2001. In 2001, we annexed the property in with like zoning. And at that time, the staff report did indicate concern. We were not thrilled with the idea as a staff of granting equivalent zoning because of some of the issues of density that would have otherwise been permitted. However, our Planning and Zoning Commission and then City Council agreed to grant equivalent zoning. So that was 2001. 2001, 2002, and now we're in 2023. Property was then downzoned back to R2, which is actually probably what we would have preferred to it have been in 2001. And that takes off the table entirely the opportunity for any multifamily development. And so unless we reverse the actions of the rezoning and rezone it back to RMF, which I can't tell you what the likelihood of that would be if that were proposed, this is a parcel now that is destined either for approval of development with the cottage standards for the development that you have presented to you, or single or two-family development.
Mr. Zender, I cannot recall. Is the R2 zoning designation permitting the placement of vehicles above or in front of the building envelope?
It does allow that, so it is only in the RMF zoning district that we will not allow you to park within the front yard. The R2 zoning district has two different and unique provisions. One, it will allow tandem parking, so parking that's stacked with one of your vehicles sitting within the front, the required front yard. And then in this particular instance, you have side-by-side. So again, the issue that Mr. Simon brought up was, is if there is a garage, the pavement area of that driveway matches more with what the driveway approach is, and therefore you jockey a car around like you would with a single wide driveway in some of our older sections of town. Here, this does comply. You can park in the front yard in the R2. So while it is an odd configuration, and that was also discussed at great length with our review staff when this proposal came in for preliminary platting, because we were as skeptical maybe as some of you may be right now on the board, is this really going to work? At the end of the day, we can't tell somebody how you use your front yard in the R2. We can tell you how you can't pave more than the required front yard of an X specific amount, which at that point we still are not exceeding that. And that's really the only regulation that we have. If they had paved over 500 square feet of the front yard, that would be where we would have an ability to tell them that your design does not work. They have not gotten there yet, and those figures were verified before the design drawing that you had presented to you this evening was prepared.
And another question on the backyard setback that the gentleman was worried about. You think it'd be closer to 22 feet, not the 25 feet that would be normal, but it would be greater than the 10 feet that he was worried about?
I can definitely tell you that it'll be greater than the 10 feet because of the 16-foot utility easement. So it's 16 at a minimum. If the applicant, in their design of their final product, decided that they would like to go further back, they could occupy the additional 6 feet to the easement line, making, instead of a 55-foot building, they could make a 61-foot building. Again, that sits within the purview of the board. The board can specify a minimum rear yard setback. And that is, again, that's something that if you're looking at providing the maximum amount of setback without impacting potentially the feeling of space, it is in your purview to suggest that, no, the setback needs to be at a minimum of 16. You could go as far, based on the drawing, to 22 feet and, in essence, be granting what would be considered a 3-foot variance in the typical R2 zoning rear yard.
I guess my thought on that was that if we were to say that we approve it but with the screening, then we have to decide what the screening looks like, and then we'd have to decide that the screening goes on the gentleman's property. If the setback is the true issue or concern, then perhaps it'd be easier to put that restriction in on the how close he could get back to the utility easement, so that you get as much distance in the backyard, which was what I think the largest concern that the gentleman had, the neighbor had. So just a thought as we're thinking about how we...
Can we dictate that they place screening on someone else's property?
I would need to research that. I have usually... The board would only put requirements on the applicant's property, not someone else's.
Which is what I was, that's so the reason I was thinking we might go down a different road.
Yeah, I mean, if you're thinking you do want to require screening, I would ask that you consider tabling this so that Becky or I can look into that. And that would also then give the opportunity of the parties to potentially work out this issue on their own and come to a resolution on it. But if you have other ways of getting there without that requirement, that's within your purview as well.
Sounds like we might.
Mr. Zenner, is it possible? I mean, so it seems like setback is an issue, but it's only an issue on a portion of the lots or on some of the lots, not all of them. Is there any way that we would be able to word a restriction that applies only to specific lots? Or, I mean... You see where I'm going with this? What if we're going to create a restriction, it doesn't necessarily make sense to have that restriction on the lots that are facing a parking lot, whereas it might make sense if it's abutting a residential lot.
What I would suggest then at that point, if that is the direction that the board would like to go in, yes, I think you can do that. I think you can apply the restriction on the subject parcel. And I would suggest that maybe the way to word that would be utilizing the parcel's address and then just stipulating that the rear yard setback along this parcel address would consist of X. And the parcel address in question, again, let me pull that up here, is, I wouldn't actually use the parcel. I'd use the parcel address, and I would use the lot number just so we're clear on what the lot is that we're applying special standard to. So the lot in question is addressed as 150 West Old Plank Road, and it is lot 5 of the Walnut Brook Plat 3. So if you are going to make a motion as it relates to this project and you want to apply the condition of an enhanced setback, it would apply to lot 5 of Walnut Brook Plat 3, addressed as 150 West Old Plank Road.
I'm confused. What is that? Is that the
that's where he lives.
Neighbors?
Yes, that's the neighbor's property. Neighbors. That is only there.
I would recommend potentially going a different way than that, because if we're going off of the applicant's materials that they've submitted, you could put the setback on any lots adjoining the other party's
property
line.
Okay. And then I had one additional question. If I understood you correctly, let's say that this project didn't go through and they decided to build an apartment building. If it's my understanding, if that were the case, then the parking lot would be then behind the building between that gentleman's property and the structures.
So let me first reiterate, you can't build an apartment building on this property. It is not zoned to accommodate that.
I'm sorry, I thought you said there would be.
No, okay. Apartment, no multifamily is permitted on the property as it is presently zoned,
okay.
Which is R2. So what you would end up with is duplex development, which would have a standard driveway coming off of a public street, and the parking could be in front of that duplex, or you would have a standard single family home with the same type of scenario.
Okay.
So no multifamily can be built on this property at this point.
So, but before, when it was zoned multifamily, then that would have been the case. You could have.
How, if that was what would have been proposed, I can't tell you. All of that goes with site conditions and other factors.
I guess I was thinking that when the gentleman bought his property, mm-hmm. he could have ended up with an apartment complex next to him, and now he's going to end up with this development. So just a thought.
I have another question for you, Pat. Because it is part of our criteria for approval, number 3, the use of optional development standards will not create additional traffic congestion or risks to public health and safety in the surrounding area. So there was a few impassioned speakers at the Planning and Zoning Commission discussing and bringing up the issue of congestion and so forth. I am curious, at what point do we have the luxury to consider that or not? Specifically, a traffic study was suggested as being maybe a necessary aspect, and then I seem to recall at one of these previous cottage standards, the traffic study threshold is set at something like 100 trips per hour. I'm not really sure what the threshold is, but given that this is an already congested area, adding more congestion is going to worsen the problem, clearly. So how are we supposed to deal with this?
So any development of the property beyond the single-family residence on it will add congestion to the existing conditions. There is a threshold by which we utilize that is established in the development code that requires a traffic study, and it is the generation of more than 100 trips in the peak hour. Our city traffic engineer evaluated the proposed subdivision, evaluated the proposed rezoning request, and has found that there is not the potential for more than 100 trips in the peak hour. An existing background condition of already a congested roadway segment can be set on many of our roads within the city of Columbia that have not experienced significant traffic upgrades. Unfortunately, that situation requires a multi-jurisdictional solution that has not yet been placed out on the table for discussion. The road has capacity based on its criteria within the code, and you know, it's at particular times of the day you're going to have greater congestion on this just due to the location of the roadway segment, its width, and what it actually dumps out onto. So this Old Plank Road will take you directly to Rockbridge Elementary School. You go north on Bethel, you will end up running into Southampton, which takes you to the high school and then takes you to Gentry Middle School. And all of that flows, all of that traffic often will flow probably from the gates or from the southern portions of the Highland subdivisions to be able to come out this way instead of going on other routes. It is just a fact of reality that this roadway is receiving more traffic than the two-lane road would preferably be desired to handle, but it is handling the traffic. It is our design standards, the road has that capacity. And I as I said in our staff report, we're not going to say that this road is not suboptimal. It is not operating at its optimal rate. But operating at optimal means that there is multi-jurisdictional investment to be able to upgrade it. And that will occur, and that occurs again incrementally over time. With each platting action, we take additional road right-of-way so we don't have to condemn at a later date. We ensure that the projects that are being built along the roadway segment install the required sidewalk. They're set back far enough so we're not impacting future residential development that's built on the corridor. Those are the types of actions that we take in the immediate. The long range side of this is this road has to be put on a capital project list, and it needs to be improved through those capital dollars, similar to what we did with Vauder, Scott Boulevard, and other major roadways in the city. It just has not elevated itself to that level. As more development is added to the corridor, it is hard to ignore the fact that the roadway will need to be placed on the list at some point.
So just to be clear, the sidewalks that'll be required as part of this redevelopment or infill development will be pulled far back enough from the street that they won't have to be torn up if there is future, when there is a future road expansion.
The desire would be to have those roads built at the future road elevation. However, with all of our street construction, if they are placed at the elevation, at grade elevation today, all of our road construction that the City of Columbia undertakes is what's referred to as a complete street. So as a part of that capital project, the complete street cross section will be put in, and if the sidewalk needs to be removed, it will be removed. It's worthy to note, however, that with some of our capital projects taking more than 10 years to be able to be funded, that the 10 years of sidewalk at grade elevation or at an elevation that meets ADA requirements is going to potentially have more service to it than if no sidewalk were there, and that's one reason why we do not normally support sidewalk waivers. It's ultimately over time you build sidewalk and you connect sidewalk, and if we as a part of the future upgrades of that corridor have to remove it, that's just part of the program.
Further questions for staff? Would the applicant like to come up and speak to anything they heard that they would like to address?
Keenan Simon, 1516 Business Loop 70 West.
Yeah, just a couple items to note. Pat had mentioned, there will be sanitary sewer easements at the rear of the lots. A lot of that has to do with the way that public infrastructure is, extended to properties that are not necessarily developed, which that multifamily neighbor that came up and spoke. Sanitary sewer line will be extended along the property line there, which that property will then have direct access to that public utility for future development if they see fit. That does create some issue with providing screening. I'd say with the neighbor having the same or a higher density zoning category currently in the county, if they did get annexed to the city and then were able to receive that higher density zoning category of RMF, then we would probably see fit that he install a screening device or would be required to have a screening device because that is a higher density development than what ours is. So when a neighbor that is asking for a screening device carries a higher zoning category, it's tough to, require the developer of the property adjacent to it to install a screening device, even though the use that it currently is now is single family. Obviously, we'd be willing to work with the neighbor. From the layout plans that we have for these houses, our depth is about 55 feet. Our front yard setback's about 23 feet. So that means that the rear of the home is going to be approximately 22 in some cases on the east side or on the west side of the street and about 24 feet on the east side. If we're looking to create more green space between his property and the new cottage style development, we'd definitely be willing to place a constraint of a 22-foot setback, rear yard setback for that, for the lots that adjoin that property. When we get to a couple of the lots that are on the south side facing the multifamily, the lot depths are a little bit shallower, and we'd like to be able to maximize the size of the house that would be able to be set on those lots. So providing an overall restriction to that rear yard, I think, is going to really impede some of the flexibility we have with all the lots overall. But as far as addressing the neighbor there to the east, we'd have no problem imposing a 22-foot setback or something of that nature if that works. Along with that, what else? I think those were the two main items I just wanted to touch on and at least like talk through, and if you have any questions.
So after the planning and zoning meeting, you heard neighbors had issues. Did you reach out and talk with any of those?
Yeah, so the Jeremy Spillman reached out to the owner, and then we thought the best approach was to kind of assess the main complaint that was driven at the PNZ meeting was the existing pine trees. There's about five or six of them. They're on the western property line. They're pretty substantial in size. So we decided to speak to the city arborist, and we met with the city arborist on site and asked him what his thoughts were on the tree, because I had a little bit of concern with the way some of them looked. And a couple weeks ago, prior to the arborist being out there, I think they lost about a third of one of the tree in one of those high wind storms where it had fallen onto Jeremy Spillman's and Brooks' property there. And the owner had asked to cut it up and remove it and everything. And when that chunk of tree was exposed, there were some fungus and some stuff that kind of looked funny or whatnot. So getting the city arborist out there just to see what his thoughts were, ran down, and if you read the email where he kind of said, he's like, wow, I was surprised to see this species of tree because it's really susceptible to a couple different types of funguses in the city or in the central Missouri region. And they typically don't make it past the lifespan of around, I think he said 30 years or so. We definitely are interested in, and they have, we have sent the email to the owners and we asked to meet with them to discuss this. We have not been able to get with them to meet on site and talk through what the options would be, but we are interested in looking at what the opportunity would be to possibly remove the trees, because it seems that they're nearing the end of their lifespan and could potentially be an issue at the future, and then replacing them with a similar type of pine species that could be planted on their property in a similar location. So yes, I guess, well, loaded question. Yes, we have reached out to them. No, we have not 100% come to a conclusion, nor have they responded to meet with us after we have given them this email. But we're not, as far as what Jeremy and Brooks are trying to do, not against trying to come to some sort of solution that they could.
Did you reach out to the neighbors on the east?
I do not believe they did. The first folks that kind of came at Jeremy and Brooks and talked about possibly maybe even selling their property to them in the future, and then looked at the impacts of the development, and they were like, well, we want you to provide sewer service and sub-street and some other stuff so that we could develop our property, which we understand, you know, that's kind of how this stuff works. Once you're the first one in, some of those utility extensions have to be provided, and that's kind of pay to play the game. But no, we have not spoken to the neighbor to the east, so nor have did we have anybody reach out to us from them.
Did they speak at planning and
zoning? No, they did not.
Further questions? All right, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing. Would legal like to make any comments?
Thank you. I'd like to introduce City's Exhibit 1, the public hearing advertisement, the parties in interest notice, and the parties in interest list, and City's Exhibit 2, certified copies of the following ordinances. Section 29-2.2A, Table 29-2.3, Sections 29-3.3A, 29-4.1, 29-6.1, 29-6.3, 29-6.4D, and J. This is different than a variance, which I think you all know. It's the applicant's duty to their burden to put on enough evidence for you to evaluate according to Section 29-6.4J. Pursuant to that section, if you find that there's enough evidence, the board may approve an application for optional development standards if it determines that the following criteria have been met. One, the use of the optional development standards is consistent with the intended character of the area as shown and described in the city's adopted comprehensive plan. Two, the use of the optional development standards will provide adequate off-street parking for the permitted uses available in the zone district where the property is located and will not result in significant off-site parking on sections of local neighborhood streets other than those immediately fronting the applicant's property. And three, the use of the optional development standards will not create additional traffic congestions or risk to public health and safety in the surrounding area.
Thank you. Okay. Are there any comments or discussion that we would like to have? I think we should. Janet?
Where do you start? I don't know.
Well, I'm a little torn. I do not like this traffic issue, but apparently that's not something that's really on the table for us to discuss. The only person that we've heard tonight speaking against this, I believe we can probably resolve their concerns with a restriction on our condition on the conditional the alternative design standard. So I guess I feel like we can I can support this, although I would question affordability versus attainability. That is, you know, that's a pretty steep price point for a small footprint house with a small footprint piece of land. But I guess who am I to question?
Well, that's and develop the subjective. Market. That's a totally subjective.
Exactly. So. Yeah.
For purposes of clarification, traffic congestion is one of the factors. So they have to show that the use of the optional development standards will not create additional traffic congestions or risk to public health and safety in the surrounding area.
Correct. And so therein lies another issue or question that I have that I regret not asking is, does this traffic study apply only to the subject lot and subject property and the street that they'll be constructing, or does this apply to the literal surrounding area, like the areas?
It would be the surrounding area, not just the street on their lot.
It seems to me, if you look at the other developments that happen around there and off of this street, what they're adding is minimal compared to other developments. I mean, look at what they did on Sinclair to the south of Grindstone, right? And they didn't widen Sinclair, and there's a 300-lot subdivision or 400-lot subdivision going in south of Mill Creek. So the other thought I had on it was it, we keep hoping for denser development, right? Instead of putting one 10,000-square-foot house on 5 acres and you only get two cars coming off of it, so we don't have to worry about the traffic, but we don't get any density, building density. So here you've got a project that, I mean, they're doing really kind of what we'd like to see them do. And as far as affordability goes, it's affordable to someone. And then whatever home that person moves out of, maybe that one is at a 200 price range, and now a more affordable house, what we would think would come available. So it's really because of the transition of people moving out of one affordability into the next level of affordability that creates affordability in the true reality of the way a society works. So to me, I like the idea that we're going to do something that's not right in the middle of town. We're going to, you know, someone's going to put some density there. And I mean, if you look at the design, you know, it looks really cool and kind of hip and modern. And so I'm a fan of the idea. And you know, I wish Old Plank was already widened. But like Mr. Zinner said, that's what forces Old Plank to get widened. And the other issue is you've got the county and the city, and we already know they won't work together. So if you had to wait till that happened to get Old Plank developed or widened, you'd be, all of those trees would be, 100 years old by the time we got to that. But so
that's what we're doing. We're waiting. I mean, oh, if we don't approve anything.
If we don't approve anything because we're waiting for the county and the city to get together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those trees will be 100 years old.
Well, to your point, Randy, there are, I counted them, more than 72 single-family residences, more than 127 large multifamily structures, which could contain multiple dwelling units apiece, that are all pouring into Old Plank and Bethel and Forum and Providence. It is a significant problem that they're facing. Do these 51 cars, if you calculate the total, it looks like 3 cars per home, 17 homes, that's 51 cars. If we deny this, this lot would support something like 19 lots, and those would be duplexes, double that. Now you're talking about double that number in cars. So are we really going to save the world by denying this? I don't know.
Well, I suspect not. If we're going to, if saving it is lessening the traffic on Old Plank Road.
So in this regard, I think this project may actually minimize the traffic, but of course that's subject to speculation.
Well, and that's if every home had 3 cars.
Right.
Yeah, probably won't. So I don't know that students are going to be renting $300,000 homes, but I guess it depends on what household you come from.
Any further comments or discussion?
So what are we doing about the neighbors that don't want people to?
I think we can put a restriction on those 5 lots, as I understand it, and I'll ask for clarification on that, that those have to have a 22-foot rear yard setback. So then instead of 10 feet out their side, you know, it's 22 feet. And nothing wrong with planting shrubs and some kind of a wire and wood fence along there. And we can put a restriction on it.
Could it, Did I misunderstand or the property that the gentleman owns?
150 West.
Yeah, no, I got the address. The zoning for it would allow. Could he tear that house down and do multifamily?
Technically, yes. In the county now, is the development potential on the property multifamily, traditional multifamily, like what is adjoining the property? That, again, that's a design exercise, consolidation of property. So 150 West Old Plank, plus the property that is to the east of that, is zoned RM. Both properties are combined, which is a possibility as well. You could yield a small multifamily building out of that on those two lots.
Thought so, I had was that if we put a restriction on this development to have 22 feet, would we then have some sort of rider to say when he develops that and it turns it into multifamily that we would do the same thing?
So
I would say, unfortunately, he's still in the county.
Yeah.
So we can't put any restrictions on.
I understand.
And we can't put any restrictions on a non-applicant.
No, but you catch what I'm saying.
Sure. Right. So I think what would end up happening is if, in fact, it's annexed in order to, because currently it's not connected to public sewer. So it would have to be annexed for connection to public sewer, which unlocks additional density. So if that property is annexed and developed, it would have other restrictions, have multifamily restrictions associated with it. So those are going to be independent. Multifamily adjacent to residential has a different setback. So there's going to be a greater setback than what exists today on that property. Because of that, you'll end up with, if I'm not incorrect, it's 15 feet in the RMF district, 10 or 15 feet between the property line and the building. And then you'd have a 22-foot setback along the common property line. And that's just the way it would be. But we have no idea how long that existing single-family home will remain and will remain in the county. And I think so, setting aside what may end up happening in the future, is what I can tell you here is I would assume that both parcels will come in at the same time that are currently RM in the county. And may be developed or redeveloped at the same time because the area associated with that is greater and it offers a greater opportunity. Will it be RM or RMF? I can't tell you that. It could go R2, but I that's speculation. I think what is suggested is a condition associated with the 150 West Old Plank Road property and a setback where the proposed development abuts that parcel. That's probably a solution that would be equitable at this point.
Since we have the public hearing back open again, I want to ask, is this condition that we're discussing now considered technically to be a variance, or is this just a, for instance, I guess what I'm getting at is, will this be one of those conditions that now runs with the land indefinitely, or is this sort of a one-time condition that we apply to the construction and replatting?
I would think that it would run with the land on the applicant's property because you're recording what you come up with regard to the optional development standards.
The board order will specify specifically what the dimensional requirements are that must be complied with. So in this particular instance, all lots except those abutting this parcel will comply with what has been shown or what is prescribed by the cottage development standard in the R2 zoning district, except for the adjoining lots will have a rear yard setback of X. And that would be the way that it would be listed in the board order, because this does have a board order associated with it.
That be made a motion?
Well, hang on. Are there any further questions for Pat or legal? Okay, Mr. Spillman or Mr. Simon, you are free to come up and rebut if you wish. If you have anything that you want to add to that, you don't have to.
Road
Okay, I'm going to reclose the public hearing.
My apologies, sir.
It's no problem. Okay, so we've had our discussion. I suppose, does somebody want to make a motion?
Sounds like Paul does.
Yes. Let's see. I make the motion that we approve with the stipulation that the setback be increased to 22 feet on the property abutting the
150 Old West Plank Road.
Lot 5 of Walnut Brook, Plot 3.
Ms. Wibbenmeyer, did you want that stated slightly differently?
I think I got confused by the motion. So what you're trying to do is to approve the cottage standard, approve the cottage standards with the condition that the rear yard setback on the lots adjoining 150 West Old Plank have a rear yard setback of 22 feet. Everyone in agreement on that?
I'll yes. Second it.
So there's been a motion made and seconded. I believe we should probably have a roll call. Oh, I guess, is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Pat?
Okay. Motion has been made and seconded in the matter of case 234-2023 to approve the optional development standards subject to the rear yard setback abutting 150 West Old Plank Road being a minimum of 22 feet. Mr. Norgaard?
Yes.
Ms. Hammond?
Yes.
Mr. Minshew?
Yes.
Ms. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Sharp?
Yes.
Motion passes, 5-0. Board order will be issued approving such action.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Simon, Mr. Spillman. All right, moving on to special items of chair and vice chair elections. Mr. Zenner, would you like to conduct?
We can conduct our annual event, which normally would have occurred back in July, but given we haven't met since March, this evening we have to handle our perfunctory action every year, and that is to elect a new chair and vice chair. Presently, chairman is Chairman Norgaard, and then vice chair, if I am not incorrect, is Ms. Hammond. We can open the floor to nominations, and anybody can nominate who they may choose. We'll close nominations and then vote on chair, and then do nominations for vice chair and follow the same procedure. We do have to voice vote, so when we get ready to close nominations, we'll call for a roll on that action. Or are there nominations for the position of chair for calendar year 2023-24? For the Board of Adjustment.
I nominate Peter Norgaard.
Norgaard.
Norgaard. I'll second that.
Any other nominations? Hearing none, there has been a motion, there has been a nomination made to have Mr. Norgaard continue his chairmanship of the Board of Adjustment for 2023. Carry a roll call vote. Mr. Sharp?
As an alternate, do I have full voting rights?
You do?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Ms. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Minshew?
Yes.
Ms. Hammond?
Yes.
And Mr. Norgaard?
I will abstain from voting for myself.
Oh, you're so high and mighty.
By 4 votes with 1 abstention, Mr. Norgaard has been elected for the 2023-24 term as our Board of Adjustment Chairman. Nominations for our Vice Chair for 2023-24.
Nominate Janet Hammond.
Second that.
Are there any other nominations? Hearing none, nomination has been made and seconded to reelect Ms. Hammond as our Vice Chair for the Board of Adjustment for 2023-2024. Mr. Norgaard.
Yes, Ms. Hammond.
Mr. Sharp.
Yes.
Ms. Rogers.
Yes.
Mr. Minshew.
Yes.
And Ms. Hammond?
Well, I'll vote for myself, yes. Good.
Thank you very much. So for our 2023-2024 session of the Board of Adjustment, Chairman will continue to be Mr. Norgaard, Vice Chair being Ms. Hammond. That, we do not have a meeting coming up on our next meeting will not be until tentatively November 24th. Presently, our applications for the October board meeting have passed. There were none. I do anticipate a Board of Adjustment hearing on the November 14th agenda. We have recently received a request for a concept review for a project that has previously come before the board, was denied, but it has been more than a year ago. And this is for the Seven Brew Coffee drive-through on Providence Road, just to the south of Raising Cane's. Concept review is scheduled for September 21st. That will allow an opportunity for our technical staff to provide observations of compliance and non-compliance, and then provide opportunity for the applicant to submit for the November 14th meeting by October 2. So I would anticipate that we will have an October meeting, or November meeting. If not November, I would anticipate a December meeting. And at this point, I won't know our December calendar date until later in October, October 30th to be exact. We will keep you abreast. It was my great appreciation to have you all show up after such a delay, and thank you this evening for your attention.
Is there anyone from the public who wishes to speak? I see none. Are there any comments?
Motion to adjourn.
Well, are there any further comments from the board? No? Okay.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion made. I'll second.